program was the WBAI Evening News with Paul DiRienzo, and that is heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Real World with Mike Sargent coming up. This is WBAI New York.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. And it's time now for Real World. Sergeant, and this is Real World. Today I'm going to talk about a very special film that is currently playing right now here in New York at the Quad. It's a film called 1982.
Yasmin?
She's gone now.
Hey, Wissam.
The logline for the film is that during 1982, the invasion of Lebanon, in an idyllic Quaker school in the mountains above Beirut, an 11-year-old named Wissam is relentless in his quest to profess his love to a girl in his class, while his teachers, who are on different sides of the political divide, try to mask their fears. Now, this is a sort of a brief synopsis of a really powerful film that not only shows the toll of war and what it is to be, you know, an innocent in this, but it resonates on many levels about too many things that are going on today in terms of not just taking sides, not just war, but just how we care for our children as adults as we do these adult things, like make war on each other. I got a chance to speak to the director and writer of this film because this film is actually based on his life experience, because he grew up and was in school and was there in 1982 and was 10 years old and had an experience that he needed to bring to the screen. It's a powerful film, as I said, and it's the director's first film as a writer-director. He's produced films for and music videos for David Bowie, Lady Gaga, Annie Lennox, Lana Del Rey, and major, major stars. I got a chance to talk with him about the making of this film, why he made it, what he hoped to achieve, and what has happened as a result of this film screening for audiences. He has a very interesting name, which I was able to actually pronounce correctly.
Waleed Mouannis?
Perfect.
Okay.
How right. Many people mess up my name? My God.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Can you give me a little bit of a context just for people to understand
1982 and what was going on in that region, just so folks can understand. And then I'd like to jump into what the movie goes into.
All right. Well, 1982 is a very polemic year in Lebanese history. So Lebanon's in the Middle East. On our south, there's Israel, Palestine, and on our east, there's Syria, and then we're facing the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. We had like a lot of there were a lot of complications in from the 70s, 1975, 76. The Lebanese War started. It was a very fractious war. A lot of factions, some factions supporting the PLO, which is the Palestinian Liberation Organization. There were, there was the right wing, also there was the Falange, and you had the country split. It's a country of 18 religions, and we have a system of government that's a confessional system. Now, what's really different, and why I made a film about 1982, is basically in 1982, though there's been all these little wars, little incursions here and there, 1982 was the year when the country was fully invaded. At the time, Lebanon already had the Syrian army, was also sort of almost entrenched in certain parts of the country. And there was the PLO in a part of the country as well. And then the PLO and Israel had their own battles. And what happened is there was a decision in Israel to kind of push the PLO north and away from its border. In the process, this became a much bigger war than anybody anticipated. And it was like, this is the moment in time when war overtook the entire nation as opposed to just these little wars.
To me, this film has at least four layers. And that's one layer. There's conflict. Okay. That's one layer. There's conflict. And part of that conflict, and I'm going to use this because I feel there's a lot of metaphors in your film. I love the use of sound design. I love the idea of explosions. In this context, it means war. It means things are going on. But it also becomes an element to show how it's encroaching. It's getting closer and closer. But at the same time, we have two other stories, two other levels. There's from the kid's point of view, there's a little boy who is in love with a little girl who's, let's just say, from the other side of town. And then there is the adult story. I know you yourself lived through some of this conflict. So how much of it then became maybe more than what you realized?
What happened is I knew I wanted to write about my experience of that moment in time and in history. I was 10 at the time. So I was crushed out. I was one of those kids who always got in trouble. I would write love notes to girls that you shouldn't write those kinds of love notes when you're that young. I kept it very safe in the movie. It's actually a little more complex in real life. So that's what I set out to do. And I remembered very clearly that day, which is a day that changed our lives. And it was a day where I was crushed out. It was the end of the year. And I'm like, will I ever be able to see, will I ever see this girl again? Even though I was 10 at the time, will I ever see this girl again? I was emotionally very invested, but it was all in my head as well. So that's a layer. But with that layer, somehow, as I started to weave this narrative and contextualize the narrative, I realized that the reason that we couldn't, that I never, that it never material, that the love never materializes, is essentially way bigger than me. And therefore, I could not ignore that narrative. So that narrative had to pull itself in, which is the tension of war and the sonic, the sounds of that day and everything. And then, of course, with all of that, we had a conflict even in the adults surrounding me at the time, which kind of informed the politics, informed us a little bit about the polemics. I didn't understand the details of the left and the right and all of that. All I knew is that there was people that we knew who were close to the family as well, who were on the left, And there were people even within my family that were completely on the right. And I knew that there was a clash. And I saw it in the adults around me. I didn't understand it until I was older. So in this film, I kind of kept that, the detail of that suppressed, but the emotion of that absolutely not. So it automatically sort of, it's like there's a thread. And this is what I learned in this, is you have this thread. And then the moment you start weaving the thread, essentially you're building that world. And the more complete your world becomes as a writer or as a filmmaker, both visually, orally, and in every way, then the more emotionally charged it automatically becomes. This is where all the layers come in.
There's another character who, in the midst of all of this, and I think this is part of what ties this all together, is everybody's helpless in this situation.
Correct.
And you have the secretary who's just fielding calls. And that's sort of that trying to make sense of the madness. And I just want to know, how important was it to put that character and that layer in there?
Because there's the driving force.
Yes, yes.
She's the driving force. She's the engine of the school. Like, we have all these other characters. And it was very interesting. Miss Layla's character, it's kind of like the unsung character. When people watch the film, they're like, it's about the kids, it's about that. But without Miss Layla, who actually is the only person and the only character who we all know, in every school, you always have that one person that knows every student, every angle, every intention, every teacher, and this is her. And she's the person who holds the fort. And this is, for me, a very important, like, she, you know, Nadine, while Nadine Labaki's character is trying to hold and maintain a semblance of sanity, the grounding force in this is Miss Layla's character. She not only grounds the students, she's grounding the school, because even the superintendent, Mr. Brown, is not being able to compute any of this. And she's this woman that has to put her emotion aside, though she does at one point, it reaches her. But she knows that there's a level of pragmatism. And this is like, really, she's representative of the engine that keeps a nation going. Because for me, the whole school is a microcosm of that nation, you know?
Is such a powerful film, but I know it's also your first feature film. You produce a lot of films, and you produce major artists, so you've had to wrangle, I'm sure, talent, which is no easy feat. As you define your art defines you. I am curious what you learned about yourself in the journey of making this film.
I basically learned to trust. And I learned to listen. And I would say that my takeaway from this is that stories will tell themselves, and that as long as I trust and listen, what you give is what you get, right? So, and I would take it, because the thing I learned from the most are the children in this film. I had to work with them for a while, and I had to listen to them. And I had to come to a point where I had to find sort of my young self again, to be able to be their friend and not be like an authority figure. I gave them license to tell me everything. It's for the first, like, I had not felt like a kid in so long, that when I was making the film, I actually felt like a kid with these kids, because I knew about their heartbreaks. They knew about mine. I did not, the type of workshopping and work that we did together was just about me listening to them, understanding how they perceive things. I had them watch other actors, and in the process of them, I had them tell me what they thought of other kid actors in different movies that we watched together, because I wanted them to arrive at a point where they're strong. And I just felt like it just taught me about how the trust you give is the trust you get, especially when the intentions are pure. And it's purest when you're dealing with kids, you know, because there's absolutely, it's agendaless trust, because you realize that each person is trying to bring their heart, you know, whether they're very good or they're not very good, what makes everything good is the honesty, and this is what they actually really did bring to the screen in this film. I mean,
I want to know what was the most challenging part of making this film, and what so far has been the most rewarding.
The most challenging, well, there's two things that were very challenging about making this film. Creatively, I was very clear from the get-go what I was going after, and I'm sort of tenacious until I get what I needed to get. Where it was really tough was trying to get people to come behind this film financially, so I'm able to do it, which means raising money. And we raise money through both private channels and grants organizations. But a lot of people were very skeptical about this film. One, the kids, as you see, I mean, it's pretty daunting. Like, everybody's like, this is your first film. You have 100 kids in your first film. Are you out of your mind? I kind of trust my abilities and my instinct and my processes, and I'm not one to rush into anything. But one of the things that made people afraid is because everybody thought I was going to take sides in this film. And they're like, whose side are you going to take? Do we want to support this kind of film? Because, you know, the Israeli-Lebanese, Israel and Lebanon are technically still at war, right? So, and a part of Lebanon at the time was working with the Israelis and a part wasn't. So it's like, okay, whose side are you going to be on? And this was a major challenge. And I realized, like, I'm like, you just wait and see the kind of film I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make a film that sort of actually stays above the fray. And really, you cannot disrespect any side, because every side that's fighting for something always comes from a conviction. And I'm one who decides not to judge either, but rather try to understand the emotional space construct of both sides and respect it. So financing was very tough. It took about 5 years. And yeah, 5 years. And
wow.
Trying to raise a lot of money. Yeah, because a lot of people were very gun shy about this film, because they were afraid. They were afraid, what am I politically going to say? You know? And I'm not really one who has forayed into that. I'm like, you know, obviously I come from the music industry, but all I knew is that I regard myself as a peacemaker, even within my family, if there's ever you know, I'm the one who brings people together and find a way to have them talk together. And I felt like this is how I wanted to approach this narrative. The second most difficult part, which has now become the most rewarding, is seeing the film, because COVID hit, film was done. Everybody was like, okay, that's it. Move on. Give up. Like, nobody's going to want to see this film. And then just the turn, staying on it to get this film out in the world. And I realized now, I mean, what's just happened in this last month, the film opened in Mexico, it opened in Brazil, it opened here. It's going to also appear in Canada. And it was like, when you see people responding to it and how pertinent subject matter is, because the subject of this film is timeless. It's not really just about Lebanon. It's about Lebanon. It's about Ukraine. It's about what's happening in our schools in the U.S. So it's about all of this together. So for me, the message speaks louder than the film itself. And this is what's been very, very rewarding, to see how this film is being received. And I kind of had an inkling, but at one point everybody was like, give up, give up, give up. And I didn't. And I insisted, because the message needs to come across. And I learned something is, as filmmakers, our mission doesn't stop at making the film. Our mission really gets accomplished when we manage to find a way to ask ourselves, have we done our most to get the film to the audience we wanted to get it to begin with? And what the audience does is a different story, but you have to give it the chance. And you know, filmmaking is not just about making the film, it's about seeing it through. The reason you made the film is because you wanted to say something. There's no point in making the film and not getting it to a place where it could be seen, so it could say what it wants to say. So I feel the film is saying what it wants to say now, and it's bigger than me.
And I love the fact that you don't take a side. I will also say it is sad that this is timeless, that this is just what humans do, and you know, that there's still a side to take in some respects.
I mean, I think what's interesting about this, and this is something that I realized also, is that when you're a kid, you're really like, your world is complete in and of itself, and it's not contaminated yet, you know. And as you grow, I mean, the film is about this moment in time where you start to see that the kids are contaminated. It's the same as like what's happening here, like the, like what just happened in Uvalde, for instance, you know. I mean, anyway, I'll get emotional about this. Like these kids and their lives, the kids who are, there were kids who perished sadly, and there's kids who were witness to this. They, you know, their lives
forever. They're forever. They're survivors. They're forever changed.
Exactly. And every war, this is a kind of, what we have, this here is our war within us, and we tend to not regard it as such. It's not that. It's a war inside of us that exists that we have to address. We have to find a new vernacular for this. We have to find a new way to discuss this. And unfortunately, there is no brave enough voices. Well, there are brave voices, but the brave voices are suppressed. But unfortunately, they're not in the leadership, because the leadership is, as we know, bought and sold. The same with every war that's happened. I mean, for me, the 1982 war in Lebanon, then we had another incursion in 96, then we had another one in 2006, then you also in the US you also had September 11th, and like all these things sort of markings in history. But what's bigger for me is that they're also generational markings, because when you have these kinds of things happen, they contaminate a whole generation that somehow is told, you must be angry now, and therefore this anger is going to drive the next generation. In 2006, we had a war in Lebanon where Israel came after Hezbollah, and I don't care that there's Hezbollah, I don't care that there's Israel. The problem with that war is that I had nieces and nephews, they were 10. Okay, they did not know what war was. They saw it firsthand. When they see it firsthand, what did they learn? They learned, oh, there's this and there's that. You've just contaminated and angered a whole new generation, which pushes any semblance of peace yet another generation. Because we need to heal. And those perpetual wars of what I would say, they're policy wars. And they're just basically to perpetuate this anger and this ignorance and not allow people to move past that so they're able to see objectively. So when you hurt someone, you just create a memory. This film is kind of about memory, right? So this, because it is drawn from my memory. In Lebanon, we have not had reparations since the war ended. The government didn't come together and say, okay, sorry, we did this to you, we apologize. We did this to you, we apologize. At the end of the day, both sides really did an immense amount of harm to the other. But neither of them is willing to acknowledge this. Until there's a bravery about acknowledging this, how are you going to move forward and build a nation? And this applies to anywhere in the world. We have to, history keeps repeating itself. And the question is it a choice that we don't want to learn from history because somehow there's economics to it? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, you have to say who's profiting for us to not learn. Well, Walid Mwanis, we could easily talk for a long time, in a range of subjects. But last question, a two-part question is, what do you hope for audiences to come away with? And, you know, we were talking about some of the rewarding things. What's maybe been one of the most, there's always that, I shouldn't say there's always, if you're lucky, you make something and then somebody says something or has a reaction that kind of makes whatever you went through to make it partially worth it. So I just want to know if you had a few moments like that.
What was the first question?
The first question is, what do you want audiences to come away with? And second question, what's been one of the most powerful moments for you?
Okay, I want this film to travel, to talk to people. I want people to be brave enough to go see this film on both sides of the divide, particularly the Middle Eastern conflict divide. Because when you make films like this, you make films like this because you're kind of igniting or continuing a discourse. This film is about a discourse for peace. And it's my discourse, yes, it's my argument. It leaves you... This film does change hearts and minds for those who really want to see the truth of it. The truth that we're all the same. Like Israelis, for example, they don't really know what we are like as Lebanese. And I think the same way, or the Palestinians, they don't know what, you know what I mean? Everything is sort of so mediated. This film transcends all of this and makes us one. It shows you that we are mirrors of each other, and the war is just a choice. So, because we have cowardly leadership, or maybe we are afraid of our history, you know? So I hope this film really, I hope that people walk away with this film rethinking, reassessing what it means, you know, to be one people. So that's one. The second thing is one of the most rewarding moments of this film, where you kind of know, you're like, why am I making this film? In Lebanon, we don't talk about our past. We didn't, the Lebanese war was very, very brutal. I was in Canada at the premiere of the film. I had two twin sisters who came down from the audience. They were devastated. They were completely wrecked by the film, and they were so moved. And they basically said thank you. And then they went on to say their parents were participants in the war in Lebanon, not just like the people in the film, because this is a film about people who don't participate in the war, such as myself, my parents. We didn't carry arms. We just were found. Most people find themselves in the middle of a war. But they were so emotional because they're like, they grew up in a household of both Lebanese parents that never wanted to talk to them about the past. Never wanted to tell them where they came from. They're like, we want to forget this. This is a part of life that we shouldn't even bring up. And even their parents had told them, don't go see this film. There, in spite of their parents, they came and saw this film. And they thanked me and they said, for the first time ever, we feel we understand our parents. When someone tells you this, and yeah, so it was so moving because it meant so much to me that this film is explaining something that we're not talking about in Lebanon, which is basically a hard past. We have to look at that in the mirror and be like, let's not let it happen again. And that moment for me was just very rewarding. It told me that the film actually is doing what I was hoping it would do.
It needs to exist.
It needs to exist.
We've been speaking with director Walid Mouanis about his new film, 1982. It stars Mohamed Dali and Nadine Labaki, who is also a filmmaker. 1982 is playing at the Quad here in Manhattan, and it's going to be playing out in Long Island. Check local listings. I highly recommend the film. Look for it, 1982. I'm Mike Sargent, and this has been Real World. If you've enjoyed the show, please make a pledge in the name of Real World. You can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or go to WBAI.org and put in Real, R-E-E-L, World, and make a pledge. Until next time, I'll see you at the movies.
Previous program was Real World with Mike Sargent, heard Fridays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI evening news. And before we go into the next program, I was told, as I've been saying during this the past couple of days, been given permission by management here at WBAI, and I will continue to say that because there is an emphasis on why I say what I say, to tell you about the situation, what's going on in regards of the mere survival of the station, meaning, as you know, this station solely relies on listeners' generosity in finances, and we are in need of your help again. Now, you've been hearing carts and announcements and producers talking about the transmitter fund, meaning that we need money, we need to raise money to pay the rent for the transmitter fund, which is true. What is not being heard, and what I'm telling listening audience as much as I can, is to let people know that the situation is a lot more dire. I am not going to sugarcoat it.